Thank you. This meeting is being recorded. Good morning. It is Wednesday, December 4th, 2024. The time is now 11:03 a.m. This is a public meeting for the draft excise tax advisory or ETA title software and maintenance agreements, which provides guidance for applying the multiple points of use exemption to applicable software and maintenance agreements. My name is Tiffany Doe. My last name is spelled D as in Delta, O as in Oscar. I am a tax policy specialist with the Interpretations and Technical Advice Division, also known as ITA, for the Department of Revenue. I will be the presenter for this meeting. Also in attendance from the Department of Revenue are Chelsea Brennigan, in her role as the Department Excise Tax Advisories and Engagement Manager, Kathy Holder and Barbara Imperial, in their roles as management analysts. Kathy and Barbara will be monitoring our recording for this meeting. We also have the following employees from the department observing today's meeting. They are Jeanette Goot and Atif Aziz. We are conducting this public meeting remotely through Zoom. Participants here are joined through Zoom. We do not have other parties physically present for this meeting. Thank you for taking the time to attend this public meeting and providing us with valuable feedback concerning this draft ETA on the application of the multiple points of use exemption to software maintenance agreements. This meeting was announced through publications on the department's website on October 30th, 2024. And by Gulf delivery notification to interested persons. The purpose of this meeting is to solicit comments from the public prior to adopting the ETA. The draft ETA as now written is provided for discussion purposes only and is available on the department's website. We will include a link to the draft ETA in the chat for your convenience and review. Before we begin the presentation and then open the discussions for public comments, I would like to first go over a few guidelines for this meeting. All attendees are muted upon entry, and we ask that the attendees remain muted for the durations of the meeting unless they wish to make a comment or provide feedback. We ask all attendees to keep their cameras off for the durations of the meeting to allow a better connectivity. This meeting is being recorded. If you would like to comment or provide feedback, use the raise hand feature or the react icon on your screen. Wait until your name is called and unmute yourself. Before commenting, introduce yourself and share organization you are representing, if any. Please save all comments and feedback until after our presentation. Please be sure to submit your comments in writing. Please submit your written comments and or feedback to my attention, Tiffany Doe, at email address tiffanyd@dor.wa.gov by December 11, 2024. We will review and provide a response to any comments received relating to the draft ETA. We will not be addressing any comments in the chat, and we ask that anyone who would like to provide a comment or feedback on this draft ETA during the public meeting do so verbally. If you are not comfortable voicing your comment or feedback during this public meeting, we encourage you to submit your considerations in writing as previously indicated. If you have technical issue, please leave a message in the chat and we will help you. Next slide, please. Now let's begin our presentation with the agenda. So our agenda for today is as follows. First part of the presentation is to go over the purpose and the scope of this ETA. The second part of the presentation will focus on the background of the applicable laws for the guidance. Explain the guidance from this ETA, and then provide a brief summary of the guidance. And the third part of this presentation will be an opportunity for you to provide your feedback and comments as it relates to the guidance. As mentioned earlier, please be sure to submit your comments in writing by December 11, 2024, to me via email. Next slide, please. The purpose of this ETA is to explain the applications of the retail sales tax exemption for multiple points of use, or MPU for short, authorized under RCW 8208-0208, subsection 4, to sales of software maintenance agreements. To further clarify, the guidance in this ETA only applies to sales of software maintenance agreements that meet the definition of a bundle transaction. RCW 8208-190, subsection 1A, defines bundle transaction as a retail sale of two or more products, except for real property, where the products are otherwise distinct and identifiable, and the products are sold for one non-itemized price. For more information regarding the relevant definitions applied to bundle transaction, such as distinct and identifiable or non-itemized price, please see subsection 2 or subsection 3 of RCW 8208-190. In simpler terms, a bundle transaction is a transaction that has at least one item subject to retail sales tax and at least one item not subject to retail sales tax that are sold together for one non-itemized price. What this ETA does not cover? This ETA does not provide guidance for transactions that are subject to RCW 8204-050, subsection 8B, which states that the definition of retail sale or sale at retail includes any sales provided by the seller exclusively in connection with a retail sale of digital goods, digital codes, or digital automated services, whether or not separate charge is made for such charges. This ETA does not address any transaction that are subject to RCW 8204-050, subsection 8B. Next slide, please. That, let's review some of the relevant background information. What types of products are generally included in a software maintenance agreement? Well, products that are generally included in a software maintenance agreement are technical support, remote diagnostic services, help desk customer support, updates and/or upgrades to previously purchased software, pre-written computer software, patches and bug fixes to previously purchased pre-written computer software. As you can see here, some of the products listed on the screen are subject to retail sales tax and some are not subject to retail sales tax when the products are sold as standalone products. For example, when the help desk customer support and or telephone technical support are sold separately, charges for the help desk support and the telephone technical support are not subject to retail sales tax. On the other hand, examples of items that are subject to retail sales tax when sold as standalone products are charges for updates and or upgrades of previously purchased pre-written computer software, and or charges for patches and bug fixes to previously purchased pre-written computer software. Therefore, when a buyer purchases a software maintenance agreement with items that are subject to retail sales tax and items that are not subject to retail sales tax for a non-itemized price, we have a bundle transaction. These types of agreements are known as software maintenance agreements with mixed elements or mixed elements software maintenance agreements, as we will refer going forward as MESMA for short. Therefore, to be an applicable software maintenance agreement for purposes of this ETA, the MESMA must meet all three requirements noted on the slide. The MESMA must contain both retail taxable products and non-retail taxable products. The products within the MESMA are sold for one non-itemized price, subject to RCW 8208190, and the MESMA must include at least one product that qualifies for the MPU exemption. As previously mentioned, to qualify, RCW 8204050 subsection 8B cannot apply to the transaction. Next slide, please. With that, let's talk about the applicable law for this guidance. What is MPU exemption? RCW 8208-0208, subsection 4, provides a retail sales tax exemptions for purchase of eligible digital products by a business or organizations when the products will be concurrently available for use at one or more locations inside and outside of Washington. However, the law also provides that the buyer must pay use tax directly to the department in accordance with the guidance under RCW 8212-0208, subsection 7. What does it really mean? Well, let's start with an understanding of what use tax is. In simplest term, use tax is a deferred retail sales tax. So, unless there is an exemption for both retail sales tax and use tax, an exemption for retail sales tax does not necessarily mean that there is a complementary use tax exemption. So in this case, the law only provides an exemption for retail sales tax, but does not provide an exemption for use tax. Therefore, if a buyer purchases an eligible digital product and use that digital product inside of Washington, then the buyer must pay use tax on the portion of the eligible digital product sourced to Washington. So let's get back to our discussions of the MPU statute. In accordance with RCW 8208-0208, subsection 4C, when a buyer claims the MPU exemption on purchases of eligible digital products for use inside and outside Washington, the buyer must report and pay use tax directly to the department. When the MPU sales tax exemption applies, an apportioned use tax is due. RCW 8212-0208, subsection 7, provides how the use tax must be apportioned in these circumstances. Specifically, RCW 8212-0208, subsection 7, explains that the use tax is apportioned based on users in Washington compared to users everywhere. Basically, this results in taxpayers only paying use tax for the portion of the MPU eligible digital products that is available for use inside of Washington. To claim the MPU exemption, a buyer provides a seller of the eligible digital products an exemption certificate. Next slide, please. So next, let's talk about the types of digital products for which a buyer can claim the MPU exemption. Digital products that are eligible for MPU exemption are digital goods, pre-written computer software, which includes updates and upgrades of pre-written computer software, remotely accessed pre-written computer software, digital automated services, and digital codes. Next slide, please. Now that we have a better understanding of the applicable laws for the MPU exemption, let's talk about how we apply those laws to MESMA. To qualify for the MPU exemption, the MESMA must meet three requirements, as explained here. Remember that the MESMA itself must be a bundle transaction, and the MESMA cannot be subject to RCW 8204050, subsection 8B. The first requirement. The products within the MESMA must be MPU eligible. This means that the MESMA includes one or more MPU eligible products, and each MPU eligible product within the MESMA is concurrently available for use inside and outside of Washington. To further explain this requirement, let's say if you have a MESMA that have three MPU eligible products, but only two of those three eligible products are actually for use inside and outside of Washington. That MESMA does not meet the requirement one, as explained here, because not all of the three MPU eligible products within the MESMA are concurrently available for use inside and outside of Washington. Second requirement, the non-retail taxable products provided under the MESMA must relate to the MPU eligible product or products. Relate, as used in this context, means the non-retail taxable products provide support, maintenance, or improvements to the MPU eligible product or products. Example of non-retail taxable products that are provided for purposes of supporting, maintaining, or improving the MPU eligible digital products may include IT help desk support, telephone software support, and remote diagnostic services that support the eligible product. Third requirement, the only retail taxable products within the MESMA are MPU eligible products. What do we mean by this? Well, if a MESMA includes a retail taxable product that is not an MPU eligible product, the transaction is not eligible for MPU exemption, and the entire transaction is subject to retail sales tax or use tax. For example, if a MESMA meets requirements 1 and requirement 2, but also include a retail taxable product like hardware, then the MESMA is not eligible for the MPU exemption because the MESMA includes a retail taxable product. While hardware is a retail taxable product, hardware is not an eligible product for the MPU exemption. Therefore, in such instance, the MESMA fails to meet the requirement 3. Again, in order for a MESMA to qualify for the MPU exemption, the MESMA must meet all three of the requirements. Here, I just want to share that this ETA does not address the potential eligibility of transactions that involve non-retail taxable products that are unrelated to the MPU eligible products. A buyer seeking to apply MPU exemption for a MESMA that includes non-retail taxable products that are not related to the MPU eligible products and are sold as a bundle transaction should submit those facts to the department in the form of a letter ruling request to determine whether the transaction is eligible for the MPU exemption. Ruling requests can be submitted via our website. For your convenience, the link to the ruling request portal is provided in the chat. Next slide, please. With that, let's look at how we would determine the use tax apportionment for MPU exemptions for qualifying transactions. If we find that the MESMA qualifies for the MPU exemption, we then need to determine the extent to which the MPU exemption applies to the transaction by determining what amount the MPU eligible product is used in Washington versus everywhere. Notably, this ratio can change depending on the number of MPU eligible products within the qualifying MESMA. When determined, the percentage of the MPU eligible products apportioned to Washington, the user of the non-retail taxable products are not factored into the apportionment of the use tax. What we mean here is that we will ignore the users of the non-retail taxable products. such as the user for the help desk support, in calculating the use tax apportioned to Washington. In other words, we would determine the percentage of use tax apportioned to Washington based on the users of the MPU eligible products only. When a qualified MESMA has only one MPU eligible product and has otherwise met all the requirements for MPU exemption, the percentage of use tax apportioned to Washington is determined by the number of users of the MPU eligible product inside of Washington divided by the number of users of the MPU eligible product everywhere. Users everywhere means the users located inside and outside of Washington. When the qualifying MESMA has more than one MPU eligible product and has otherwise met all the requirements for MPU exemption, the percentage of use tax apportioned to Washington is determined by the number of users of all MPU eligible products inside of Washington, divided by the number of users of all MPU eligible products everywhere. Can you move to slide number 10, please? So, for example, when we have a MESMA that has three MPU eligible products, as you see here on the screen, MPU eligible product number one has 20 Washington users out of 100 users everywhere. MPU eligible product number two has 10 Washington users inside 10 users inside of Washington and 20 users everywhere. MPU eligible product number three has 10 Washington users out of the 80 users everywhere. So the total number of users for all three MPU eligible products inside of Washington are 40. We have that number by adding 20 from the product one, 10 from product two, and 10 from product three. And then we're going to look at the total number of users everywhere. So when we add the 100 users from product one, 20 users for product two, 80 users for product three, the number of total users of all three MPU eligible products everywhere are 200. In this example, the total users in Washington divided by total users everywhere for all three of the MPU eligible products is 20%, or 40 divided by 20, by 200. Therefore, the use tax due is equal to the full purchase price multiplied by 20%, or 0.2. So, if the full price for the qualifying MESMA is $200,000, the use tax due or apportioned to Washington is $20,000. And we get this number by multiply $200,000 by the 20% of the MPU. A portion to Washington. Please go back to slide number 9, please. Thank you. The department may authorize or require an alternative method of apportionment for use tax if the proposed alternative method fairly reflects the proportion of in-state to out-of-state use by the taxpayer, and the proposed alternative method is supported by records the taxpayer keeps in the ordinary course of business. Please go to slide number 11. Thank you. For a walkthrough of how to apply this guidance, see examples 1 and 2 within the draft ETA published on our website. With that, we want to conclude this presentation with the recommended steps for applying the guidance from this ETA. So step one, determine if the software maintenance agreement meets the requirement to be a MESMA as defined in this ETA. An applicable software maintenance agreement or MESMA must meet contain it must contain both retail taxable products and non-retail taxable products. The products must be sold for one non-itemized price and subject to RCW 8208190 and include an MPU eligible products. Also, the MESMA cannot be subject to RCW 8204050 subsection 8B. Step 2. Determine if the MESMA meet all three of the required criteria for applying the MPU exemption for MESMA as explained in the ETA. Criteria number 1. Products within the MESMA must be MPU eligible. Again, this means MESMA includes one or more MPU eligible products, and each MPU eligible product is concurrently available for use inside and outside of Washington. And criteria number 2, the non-retail taxable products must relate to the MPU eligible products. Relate again means the non-retail taxable products must provide support, maintenance, or improvements to the MPU eligible products. And criteria 3, the only retail taxable products are MPU eligible products. If the requirements are met and the taxpayer has a qualified MESMA to which the MPU exemption can be applied, determine Washington use tax as follows. First, find the total number of users of our MPU eligible products in Washington. Second, find the total number of users for all MPU eligible products everywhere. Third, find the percentage of use tax apportioned to Washington. Divide the total number of users for all MPU eligible products in Washington by the total number of users for all MPU eligible products everywhere to arrive at the percentage of use tax apportioned to Washington. Finally, to find the taxable use tax due to Washington, multiply the percentage of use tax apportioned to Washington by the full price of the MESMA. If the requirements for applying MPU exemptions for the MESMA are not met, retail sales tax or use tax is due based on the full price of the MESMA. Additionally, when the transaction is not a qualifying MESMA or is not a bundle of MPU eligible products and related services to support, maintain, or improve the MPU eligible products, retail sales tax generally applies. With that, let us move on to the feedback and comment portion of this public meeting. As this presentation is being recorded, please use the raise hand feature or the react icon with the heart on your screen. Wait until your name is called before unmuting. Once you unmute to share your comment, please introduce yourself, including an organization you are representing, before you share your comment. As mentioned, we will not be addressing comments in the chat or ask. And we ask that any comments or feedback be made verbally. Okay, with that, I see Caleb. You have your hands up, so please unmute yourself and share your comment.
Yeah, thank you, Tiffany. Appreciate that presentation. Let me just, so my name is Caleb Allen. I am with KOM Consulting. Again, thank you for extending the time to comment on this ETA. That's greatly appreciated. There's a lot going on here. Also having this hearing and the initial draft, it's great to have the department coming out with guidance like this when, we know there's determinations floating around and everybody deserves to have the same information. So appreciate the effort here. And it's a good draft. And again, we appreciate the effort and the ability to comment on it. That said, I will say that, you know, one of our requests would be that, you know, we spend a little bit more time on it. I know that's not a great thing to hear. And when I say that, you know, maybe it could be interim guidance, and then we could do more detailed work with the industry. You know, I guess the idea would be more front end work means lesser or fewer disputes and appeals and so on the back end. This is really fact dependent. So anyways, that would be the request. But having said that, you know, I do have some brief high level comments on some main concerns. But before I get into those, I just wanted to kind of put them in context, at least from our perspective, context being that the, you know, the MPU exemption arguably was created to support the data center industry and the tech industry, you know, recognizing that servers can be moved outside the state, recognizing software can be delivered to other states, so on and so forth. I think part of the intent was, you know, making tax less of an issue impacting how businesses structure themselves. And then, you know, also we're talking about apportionment, you know, sort of oddly enough in the context of use tax, but here we are. But the concept of apportionment certainly has sort of implicit in it this idea of fairness. And even in the statute, you know, the statute itself says, you know, the department may authorize or require alternative methods that fairly reflect the proportion of in-state and out-of-state. And so we think, you know, that arguably gives the department some flexibility here and also kind of a mandate to try to do this in a fair way. With that, I guess I'll jump into what our central concern, I think, is. And that is, you know, right now, the way the ETA is written, when there's multiple products in the MESMA and one of them is disqualified because it doesn't have concurrent users inside and outside Washington, then all of the products are disqualified, kind of a disqualification by proxy. It's not clear that the statute requires that, and it seems like it sort of frustrates what this project is, which, you know, appears to be to recognize that that these products can be apportioned, and it, to the extent they qualify. And so what this does is it takes otherwise qualifying products and says it's no longer qualified and can't be apportioned. And I think, you know, arguably what that results in is certainly something that, you know, it could be characterized as unfair or distortive. And I'll give an example of, you know, what I'm talking about. You know, if you had two products, let's say a DAS, you know, with all of the users in Washington, say five users, and the value of that thing, let's say, is $10,000. But you also have a product, let's say software updates, with 10,000 users, you know, enterprise-wide, and the users are all over the country, maybe even mostly outside Washington, and that's valued at $10 million. You know, right now, the way this is working, that would be disqualified, and it certainly has the appearance of being distortive or unfair. And so I think our suggestion would be to take more of a holistic approach to this. And when you do the apportionment for the MESMA, you know, assuming they're all otherwise enumerated products, is you do the apportionment using all users. So in the case I just talked about, you would just put those Washington users of that DAS in the numerator, and you would just apportion everything. And what that would do is allow for the, you know, qualifying product to get apportioned, but it would also create a larger Washington use tax percentage, you know, so it's not all one-sided. I think the criteria you have right now for the most part, could be used and supports that, with the exception that, you know, what I just mentioned is that, you know, so long as all of the products are of the enumerated type, you just take the users and do your apportionment holistically so that you don't have this sort of disqualification by proxy. The other thing I wanted to mention is, and this is something I haven't totally thought through, but, you know, the whole idea of multiple products, it's not clear, you know, when you even would have multiple products. I think a lot of these contracts really should be viewed as simply help desk support and the other technology, you know? And, you know, when I say that, you know, I think about, you know, even within the bundling statute, you know, it's got this idea that things aren't separate and identifiable, you know, if they're free or they're necessary to complete the sale, or they would otherwise be part of the same selling price if sold separately under the, you know, 8208010. And there's also, you know, sort of layering on top of that, this concept within Washington law and Washington's administration that you don't necessarily bifurcate contracts unless there's a compelling reason to do it. And so I guess this kind of ties back into, you know, this idea of multiple products and one of them doesn't qualify and therefore the whole thing doesn't qualify. I'm not sure we even need to get there sometimes, but the ETA doesn't necessarily address that. So anyways, I think, and we're going to submit written comments, and there's other things in more detail, but I just wanted to not take up all the time and just sort of mention, you know, one of our main concerns, and that is the sort of entire disqualification sort of through proxy because one enumerated product had all users in Washington. And with that, I would just say, make one more, you know, appeal to make this interim guidance and then have a working group, kind of like we did with 19402, one or two meetings, you know, flesh out the facts and then come out with a final ETA, you know, maybe late spring, early spring, something like that. So that would be the wish list. So with that, I will hand it back over to you.
Thank you so much, Kayla, for sharing your comments. And I appreciate that you will be sending your comment and you know, express your concern and feedback in writing as well. So thank you. With that, let me see if anyone else have a question. Or comment. I don't. Oh, okay. Now I see Brad. Yeah, please unmute yourself and share your comment, Brad.
Hi, Tiffany. Yeah, emphasize and reiterate, you know, some of the stuff that Caleb said, and we really do appreciate, you know, the effort put into this and the thought that was put into it to try to, you know, solve some of these issues. I would just emphasize, you know, we would urge to, you know, try to avoid doing anything in the ETA that would diminish, you know, the department's ability to apply, you know, the rules of, you know, being able to fairly reflect apportionment through, you know, books and records. And I think some of the stuff that, and examples that that Caleb shared, you know, touch on that. The other thing that, you know, stuck out to me a bit was the, I guess the second criteria in the, you know, in the three pronged criteria on the kind of relating issue. And, you know, and I totally understand, you know, the department's kind of taking the approach of not, you know, not deciding on that, to kind of leave it to be able to, you know, seek guidance on a particular contract through a ruling or whatnot. My concern with kind of the way that it's drafted right now is it seems to, because it's included as a criteria, it seems to place a burden of proof on taxpayers that we might have to kind of prove out in every contract that things are related. That it could possibly, generate a needed controversy, and additional kind of administration. So that's one concern along those lines. And just as a more broad concept on that, it seems to me that if a product is non-taxable, it shouldn't be having any bearing on the eligibility of the MPU eligible items. There's going to be a it's already kind of getting swept into taxability, but if it's non-taxable, it seems like it shouldn't have any effect on MPU eligibility. It's just a kind of broader general concept, but those were kind of my additional thoughts in addition to what Caleb shared.
Yeah, thank you, Brett. And if you could, like again, I think it's best for us to consider your comments or feedback in writing. So if you could submit your comments in writing for us, by December 11, 2024, that we would greatly appreciate that too.
Yep, thank you.
Thank you. It looks like Darcy, you're next.
Tiffany, Darcy Koiger with Ernst & Young. So again, thank you to the department for taking on this challenging issue. I agree with Caleb and Brad's comments, particularly with Caleb's comment that I think we need more time on this. I'm just looking at it. I have to admit, I read it through this morning, and it took a couple times to even kind of grasp what we're trying to do here and all the nuances of it. This is pretty complex. And I'm just envisioning kind of a documentation nightmare for the taxpayers in trying to determine what are the different products and who is using what where. And so and we know that if the department's position, if a taxpayer can't document something, you lose, it's all taxable. So I think we need a little bit more work, as Caleb mentioned, on just how this would be applied in practice, number one, because with first blush, it seems really complicated. My second comment, and I'll think through it a little bit more and see if I can provide some written comments more specific. The other comment I had is in the department's use of the customer portal example, saying that a portal is a DAS, retail sale, where we know that the department has ruled differently in certain cases. So I'm a little concerned with the department's somewhat maybe blanket presumption that a portal is a digital automated service when that's not always the case. So just wanted to be a little cautious about making blanket statements about customer service portals as being DAS. So I think that's all for now. It's going to take a few more read-throughs to try and grasp all of this. But I'm with Caleb that we need a little more time and input on this to really talk through how this is going to work from a taxpayer standpoint. That's all.
Thank
Thank
you,
you.
Darcy. Thank you for sharing your comments. And Like I mentioned to Brett and Kayla, it would be great if you could provide that in writing to us. That would be awesome. Yeah. So I'm gonna scroll through and see if anyone else have any comment. Okay. It doesn't look like anyone else have a comment unless I'm missing something. Oh, Caleb, you have an additional comment?
Yeah, I this is it's not it's sort of a ancillary, but since no one else is commenting on this, I just wanted to see if you could address, like, at the very beginning of the ETA, it talks about services provided exclusively in connection with a digitally automated service are not covered. And my assumption would be that's because it's not a bundle. And then my further assumption would be because under, the definition in 8204050A(b), it is part of the retail. It is the retail sale of a digitally automated service, which I think makes it a digitally automated service, which I think makes it MPU eligible. But it's sort of the way that ETA says we're not talking about this. It kind of leaves that hanging for me. It'd be great to close the loop and say, this is not a bundle, but it is nevertheless MPU eligible. It just sort of leaves me hanging on what the. I understand why it's not included because it's not a bundle, but it sort of leaves open the question of, well, my assumption is it's MPU eligible, but it does kind of create some ambiguity for me anyways. So think about that. I know that's not kind of directly on point to what we're doing, but it was certainly something that stuck out for me.
Thank you, Kayla, for sharing that comment. And it would be great if you can also include that comment with your written feedback to us as well. So we will take a look at that. Okay. Anyone else that would like to make a comment or share their thoughts on this draft ETA? Okay, it doesn't look like we have anyone else that would like to share their comments verbally. So, again, if you are not comfortable sharing your comments or feedback verbally, please submit them in writing to me. And again, my email address is tiffanyd@dor.wa.gov by December 11, 2024. This will conclude our public meeting for the draft ETA of the software and maintenance agreement. Thank you again for participating in this meeting with us this morning. If you are not on the department ETA's notification list, did not receive a notice of today's meeting directly from the department, and would want to keep informed of future ETA's making activities, please provide Kathy Holder or Barbara Inferior your email address. Kathy can be contacted at kathyh@dor.wa.gov, and Barbara can be contacted at barbara.i@dor.wa.gov. And the time is now 11:51, and the public meeting for draft ETA title MPU Software Maintenance Agreement is now adjourned, and our recording is ending.